Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
I really want to make a degenerate Talanos deck.
This really reminds me of Interview with a Vampire. Oh, I have 15 Hedron Archives. I can tap for 30 colorless mana.
That's brutal. That's brutal, Clad.
I mean, I got the Montresor. Why can't I get a dragon?
Hello again, and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, your source for lore, news, and brews in the Magic the Gathering community. My name is Sean, I'm your host. I'm joined by my co-host, Greg. How's it going, Greg?
He's doing good today.
Wonderful. And I'd like to remind everybody that this show is brought to you by Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com, where any order you make over $10, use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps. Save yourself 10% off your purchase, which will help contribute to future show giveaways. Speaking of giveaways, Greg, I just wanted to drop something real quick here before we get the episode started. There's a couple other podcasts out there that are really, really worth listening to, and if I can recommend one, everybody needs to go and check out Stacking 60s, hosted by Riley Knight, and he's got two other amazing co-hosts on there, but they talk about Brawl, both competitively as well as some brews, and I tweeted out to try to win a contest using our Twitter account, because we never do anything on Twitter, but... Yeah, they started to read the comment, and it was like, and the win condition post, and Riley was like, oh, that podcast, yeah, they're great, they do story, and I was like, oh my god, they're talking about us on this podcast, this is amazing, and like, yeah, it was cool, you know, those little moments that you get when you have recognition as a podcaster, it's like, they go a long way, yeah, so, Greg, why don't we briefly talk about anything we did in Magic recently?
I mean, I've been playing.
That's awesome. Okay, have you been playing Commander?
Of course.
Okay, tell me about your favorite new Commander. Is it from the Commander Precon?
Yeah.
Which one?
Been playing some Modern.
I'm going to take a wild guess here and say Esper Zombies.
Wrong!
No? Okay, what is it? What is it?
I mean, I got one of them, but I didn't make it.
Right, that's a Loro, but that's a whole other story. But
I'm going to give you another... guess.
Another guess? Is it? And is it in the Esper deck?
It is not.
Okay. Fair. Is it in the Saheeli deck?
It is in the Saheeli deck.
Is it Bruticlad?
Of course it's Bruticlad.
Yes! I want to make one of those too. That guy is the new hotness, man. And I'm telling you.
He's so cool.
Do you remember in Battle for Zendikar, they made a card called Resupplant Form or Supplant Form? And it bounces a creature and gives you a token of it. That seems
I have
like,
something even better for you.
Surprise, surprise, Greg's. No, go ahead. What is it?
All right. So this is a 2-drop enchantment with landfall.
Okay. 2-drop land enchantment with landfall.
No. It's landfall. It's an enchantment that
an
has
enchantment
landfall.
With landfall. Is it Colony Heart Expedition?
I mean, if I'm playing in a blue-red deck, sure.
Oh, dang it.
Enchantment.
Dang it, that's right. Okay. All right, I give. What is it?
So when you get 3 quest counters on it, it does its thing. When it does its thing, it gives you a 7/1 trample haste that you have to sacrifice at the end of turn.
That sacrifice
at the end of the turn clause is not a part of the creature token.
Right.
It's generated solely by the enchantment.
Right. Okay.
I mean, what does Bruticlad say, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the whole not till end of turn thing is absolutely, like, game-crushing, but...
Well, I get, like, 10 dudes, and I go, I'll swing in with 70.
That's brutal. That's brutal, Clad. Brutal. Yeah. So I also actually got my hands on the Saheeli deck, and I'm very curious about Bruticlad, you know, definitely. But I really want to make a degenerate Talanos deck. I am just tingling in anticipation with the idea of being able to just be like, dink, 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 I win. I don't build decks like that. I really don't. But
don't forget to get Kirkesh in there.
Yeah. But still, it's like usually when I play, even when I play Mono Blue Urtai, you know, it's not like going to crush you immediately. But like I have a Shroom deck, you know, I don't run the infinite life combos and stuff. But yeah, no, it's super fun. All right. Well, that has been really exciting. And just as a side note, I know there's a lot of people out there with cards wondering how you might want to get rid of them. And one thing that I can attest to, having some success with, is buy listing on certain larger online card stores. Specifically, I know we're not sponsored by them, but Card Kingdom's buy list is very generous, and I've been able to acquire quite a bit of cash for extra cards over the last 2 months. And it's been really great. So, you know, it's really nice when you have a family and you've got kids and you actually have the financial means, you know, if you need in a tight pinch to support them. And it's not to say you can't buy them later, but it's I'm keeping one of each, obviously, because of Commander, you know, can't do that. But it's been very, very strangely fulfilling, you know, and like once you actually sell them, it's like you don't need to have every single card in your collection all the time. You know, especially when you're a grown-ass man like me. So, but anyway, yeah, so that's been really nice. It's been fun. I still have my Brawl decks, keeping it standard, keeping it real. Speaking of keeping it real and keeping it standard, I use that term loosely. Greg, we have a segment where we talk about lore, don't we? So
we traditionally do, yeah.
Why don't we take a jump on into Lore Corner? So we had a story or bunch of chapters of stories that were kind of little convoluted, a little tough to follow, but we heard the story of the birth of Ugin and Nicol Bolas. This was about, I think, 6 chapters long, and the concept was very interesting. I mean, I definitely read as much as I could. In fact, I chose to listen, another podcast shout out, I chose to listen to Unspoken Realms. You find that on the MTG Cast Network. He does a great job of orating, you know, all the stories. And even just listening to that, it was just kind of hard to follow. I mean, am I off base here, Greg? Like, what was your take on the most recent Magic story?
No, not at all. I actually think I stopped reading after the 4th episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And the only reason why I mentioned that is because, like, we were spoiled with Ixalan. You know, the narrative team on that just absolutely crushed it, you know? And I feel like...
Well, I mean, Amonkhet did really well, too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, like, I feel like...
And Dominaria.
I feel like Martha Wells did a good job in Dominaria, yeah. But, you know, it's a core set, so honestly, how much can you really expect? I just find the fact that it's Ugin and Nicol Bolas is, like... birth, you know, this needs to be something everyone can look at, like people coming into the game are like, oh, who's Nicol Bolas and who's Ugin? Oh, we'll read the story and find out. Someone jumping in for the first time might be like, okay, is this a choose your own adventure? Do I go to page 97? Do I go to page 103? I have no idea what I'm reading here. Greg, it has actually been quite some time since we've been here last, so we have another story to dip into. This one, a little more compelling, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. It was much more intriguing. The writer comes from us from horror writing, so she's done a lot of horror stories in the past, so that got a lot of us excited, of course.
Yeah, definitely. So this 3-part series that we're going to go over for you now is the story of the Green Planeswalker, Vivian Reed. And we join Vivian on the plane of Ixalan.
Whoa. The island of Ixalan.
We
called it Ixalan. They still haven't given us the true name of the plane.
Okay. Gotcha.
Got to beat you up a little bit.
Why would Vivian be all alone out here on Ixalan?
I'm pretty sure she wasn't alone. She was on this exploration for the vampires.
Why is she the last of her kind out here?
Oh, you mean the fact that she's a planeswalker outside of her plane, and there she is alone. Yes, you know what?
That's what I meant by alone.
I mean, there's a lot of information we gain by reading the story, but we know she is the last known survivor of the Plane of Skala.
Yep.
Which we also know the Plane of Skala was, there's a lot of shamans there and druids and some other stuff that we don't know about, and the fact that Nicol Bolas thought it was pertinent to destroy the plane.
Right.
Oh, yeah, she was alive when that happened. As in, Nicol Bolas did this within the last maybe 50 years.
Yep.
And yep. The people of Skala made the Arkbow. Is a special artifact that can summon the spirits from Skala to attack whoever Vivian wants because it is bound to her.
Right. But it's not just the spirits of Skala.
No.
As we'll find out later.
I love the second part of the story where, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. We'll definitely dive into that. And seeing as this is a three-part series, and we're going to put it all into this this episode here for you, we're going to give you guys the best possible summation of it that we can.
Right.
But Vivian Reed is approaching the town of Luno, which is a known town. The capital town, yes, a very, very highfalutin, very well-to-do vampire town within the Legion of Dusk. So she is, you know, venturing through the streets, and the artist, or
Why is she even there?
I don't know. Greg, why don't you tell us why she's there?
The adventuring partner on the island of Ixalan was hunting a Brontodon. And she alluded to the fact that she was able to capture them. She had this well-to-do, pompous vampire that was acting as her guide as they come back. And because she was able to get this Brontodon, and he's well-to-do, they want her to join into the royal menagerie to see what they do there to preserve life on Torazon.
Right.
Which is the island that Luno is on. So they get to the city, and it's hustle and bustle. Of course, there's this little interesting thing that comes from being at the port as they get there. You want to go and continue that?
No, why don't you take it? Let me.
Oh, my gosh. Go ahead. So as we're going through the port, the vampire's there leading the way, kind of talking about pomp and circumstance and droning on and on about how Leno and the vampires are the best thing ever. You know, kind of like a British person talking about the matriarchy. Anyhow.
Sure.
We notice that there's this young boy, a street urchin, stealing from a stand. And Vivian grabs the boy because, of course, thievery is to not be. It's not right. And the boy offers up his blood. And Vivian's like, well, that's weird. Why would I want your blood? And the boy responds with, well, that is the currency here in Leno.
That's right.
And
this little pickpocket is about to pay with his blood.
She lets the boy go. The vampire thinks it's a little weird, of course. And they continue on into the city. She hasn't seen the Brontodon now. It's been taken off to go to the royal menagerie. And as they continue through the city, they come, if I remember correctly, to the royal menagerie. And on the wall are busts and heads of dinosaurs, beasts, and animals alike all over the place. Of course, they do have them living as well, but mostly preserved. Kind of like a trophy room, right? Talk about a royal menagerie and preserving life. How does this preserve life? She's really, really not okay with this. And at this point, the Arkbow is singing to her about how it is not okay. Because as we now know, the Arkbow is a sentient being because it's got, well, we'll get into that later.
Yeah, exactly.
So they get to the royal court where they start the show of the evening. The king is there and all the well-to-do, and did we pass the procession through the perfume quarter before this?
I don't think so, because she's witnessing the procession as it's going on.
That's and right.
The female vampire next to him that she smells as heavily perfumed. I love how all these vampires just smell like rot and decay and death, and yet they try to cover it up with the potpourri.
Yes.
You know, to be proper and whatnot. And, you know, they're so, you know, highfalutin here. They're speaking with this, you know, what we would consider to be like a French sort of accent. They refer to everybody as monsieurs and mademoiselles.
You know, this really reminds me of Interview with a Vampire.
Oh, sure. There you
yeah,
go.
Except yeah.
Tom Cruise isn't a part of Magic the Gathering. But, you know,
who knows, there's a movie to be made
one of these decades, you know, maybe we'll see.
That's really
appear.
Like the best way I could describe it is that they're really
pulling
out of Interview with a Vampire. These vampires, they hate the fact that they're dead. So they're hiding it with what they can with the living.
Yes. Yeah. So as this procession's beginning, you do see the King Lucard and Queen Salazar. But then following them is the Baron of Verneau. And it's very interesting because when he walks in, he immediately takes notice of Vivian. Not, you know, overtly, but she can see his eyes, you know, kind of looking at her. And he walks in and, you know, he basically says, "Guests, welcome. We are here for..." I'm sorry. The female vampire that I was telling you about was telling Vivian, "You are about to witness an event that many would give their firstborn child to see, to be a part of. I don't think you understand how appreciative you must be." And Vivian is just sitting there in absolute disgust. Yeah, she's like, "This is disgusting," you know. And so they start bringing these animals in. And they've got, you know, these animals that are dressed in silly outfits, and they've obviously been tortured and are here for their quote unquote entertainment. And Vivian's just, she says, "This is cruelty.
This is gross."
And obviously, it's just not anything that she wants to be a part of. In fact, it's quite angering to her. And then the Baron says, you know, "And now thank you all for coming. I know you've been waiting for our grand main attraction. And, you know, let's bring it out." And they bring out this absolutely incapacitated, tortured, brutally sort of succumbed.
Don't forget that it has a broken leg.
Yeah, broken leg. There you go. Monstrosaur. And this thing is absolutely huge. However, it cannot basically fend for itself. It is completely incapacitated. Brought here for these vampires as entertainment, and Vivian is just completely shocked, taken aback, and appalled by the situation. So, what does she do, Greg?
So, at this point, when she's tired of this, she stands up, she notches an arrow, and lets loose her first arrow. If I remember correctly, the first arrow summons a bear?
A Hydra,
thank you. So, this Hydra is starting to just wreak havoc. Of course the guy of Verneau, who doesn't matter.
The Baron of Verneau.
Yeah, that guy. He doesn't matter. I mean, he does, but he doesn't. And he realized that it's from her and draws some guards to deal with her. Everybody else is running. The king's already run and ran and left. And at this point, she let loose another arrow fired at the Baron, and this time coming forth is a palooka worm.
Right? How very specific. I love it.
Well, I mean, we know what this palooka worm is. We've dealt with that.
Right.
We didn't see the Hydra of Scala, but we know that this palooka worm came from Zendikar. Talk about a weird occurrence. She went to Zendikar at one point.
Yeah.
So as this starts barreling into the guardsmen there, I believe that's all she summons, and she charges down there to beat into them. After some combat, a little stuff happens here and there, she gets knocked out.
Yeah,
she gets taken by them, taken to a prison cell. Arkbo's stolen.
Right.
And they're kind of poking and prodding and torturing her for answers as to how to utilize and use the Arkbo.
And the Baron wants to know what she is. He's still not sure exactly what Vivian is.
Well, he thinks she's a planeswalker at this point. And he alludes to that, but he doesn't know.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's fair. And so, yeah, in questioning her, interrogating her, the Baron is absolutely fascinated with this Arkbo. Not because he wants to use it for anything good whatsoever, and not even that he wants to use it to use the animals to cause havoc. He wants to upgrade his menagerie. He wants to make his show, you know, even more amazing. And all he wants to do is, you know, just figure out how to use the Arkbo. And of course, Vivian's resisting.
Oh, yeah.
So,
And I mean, that on top of that, he lost a lot of guards to the bear.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the scorpion.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So he keeps on telling her, you know, hey, you know, you've been out for a while. You know, we've been having some of our men look into the bow, see if they can use it correctly, but it ends up hurting them, killing them. So, you know, we need to know how to use this Arkbo. And Vivian just looks at him and she says, quote, "Return the Arkbo or I will see you die," screaming. And the Baron's not exactly too happy about this. Obviously, he wants her to cooperate. She's not going to cooperate. And so they just kind of leave her there trapped. And she sits there in sort of solitary confinement. And she starts to think to herself about the Plain of Scala and about Nicol Bolas and about how he destroyed the plain. And she almost gets sort of caught up in her own thoughts here. She's like, not on the verge of insanity, but in isolation, that's all she can think about is, you know, her home plane just being absolutely destroyed. So they keep on asking her, guards come in and say, you know, the Baron wants to speak with you about the Arkbo. And she keeps saying, no. But finally, she says, nothing can be worse than sitting here, you know, and contemplating the disaster that had happened. Regardless of what happens, nothing can be worse than seeing my home plane destroyed. So she says, all right, you know what? Fine. I'll go and talk to him. So they bring her up in front of the Baron. And the Baron's kind of just like, oh, well, hello. Welcome back. You know, thanks for, you know, giving us your presence. And we want you to show us how to use the Arkbo. You know, and she's saying, well, this bow is made for, as far as he's concerned, the Baron, as far as he's concerned, the bow is made for her.
Now, and her alone.
We know, we know through her inner monologue that there were a couple shamans back on Scala that had the ability to use the Arkbo. However, due to the eradication of her home plane, she is now the only one who can use the Arkbo. So that is pretty much true.
It really is. Yeah.
So, anyway, he decides, all right, well, how about we bring somebody in to use this Arkbo? And he brings in this guard. You know, he's a very surprisingly dexterous guy. And he picks up the bow and he goes to use it. And long story short, he dies. Just explodes or just, you know.
Yeah, something ends up happening. Killed. Yeah, he dies off. And right. We find out what it was that caused this thing to die. Oh, no, this is later. Sorry, I apologize. This isn't at this point yet.
Yeah, go for it.
So this, she just continues with this, if you really want to continue, I'm going to kill you. That's all it is. You don't get to use this. It's only me. They continue forward. The one thing that's really bugging her about this is that he's doing a vivisection of the Montresor. And I say a vivisection because the thing is alive. He's cutting into the Montresor while it's alive. And it's just, that's just not okay.
No.
And I believe the king is there too at this point, correct?
That I don't know,
because it's a part of the show. They have they're doing this live, and they've got a bunch of different priests that are there that are keeping this Montresor alive at this time, and he's cutting into it, and it's a part of the show.
Okay.
If I remember correctly. And what killed the guard from the arcbow was a spider.
Oh,
and the spider
that's right.
didn't keep out of the her and the Baron and the Montresor, they're all in this shield, but the spider gets out and she casts a spell under her breath that engorges
the spider. Yeah, she has
this
moment where she talks to the Baron and she goes, "You know what, Baron? You know what's wrong with you is you don't realize the small little intricacies that make up, you know, the fabric of nature and life mm-hmm. and something just as small as a spider could slip through your grasp. You're right." And then she, you know, grows this spider to a, you know, gigantic size. Mm-hmm. And then, yes, it ends up handling the guard.
And
yeah,
then
absolutely.
At this point, the Montresor dies. She does the ritual where she takes the Montresor's essence and puts it into the arcbow.
Right.
Then she lets the Montresor out, and it's like, oh my god, I can attack. And
yes.
The time she took over the Montresor was a lot different than any other time because she felt its will. Like, it literally had the will. It almost overpowered her. And it almost made it so she couldn't use the arcbow anymore. And it charges out. It just charges right after the king. It doesn't care about the Baron, because who cares about the Baron? It knows that it's the real reason why it's there is because of the king. So it charges through. And the king flees to his throne room to get out of there. And there's a quick exchange of words between her and the Baron. And she flies some wasps at him and decimates him. To say the least. And she follows after the Montresor. About 10 minutes later, she's like, why hasn't the Montresor dispersed yet?
Yes.
And it's really weird because its will was keeping it into being there constantly. And like the other times, the other things she summoned with the arcbow. So every time it continues through, she'd continue firing so it would re-come back out.
Right.
They make their way to the royal menagerie, and she's like, I can have fun with this. And she enlarges all of them. So she multiplies the size of all of the creatures that are alive in the royal menagerie. And as they break free of their pens, of course, what's the first thought in their mind? It's definitely Stampede.
Yep.
So now she's riding her spirit Montresor, who's chasing after the king, and everything else is kind of billowing around town, starting to destroy everything. They find the king, and the Montresor chomps down on him, biting him yep. in half. And yep. he tries to swallow, and, well, he just couldn't. He looks at Vivian and is like, I wanted to eat him. And she's like, I'm sorry, I don't know what to tell you. It is this, yep. this great exchange between the two of them. And as they continue on, they lead the queen and the menagerie. They're just plowing their way all the way down through the perfume quarter, through everything. One of the things that comes by is they come by a shopkeep, and he's giving some blood to a vampire. And he's thinking about how boring the day is because of what's going on in the court. And then just bunches of dinosaurs and beasts plow right through this guy's shop.
Yep, and there's another scene where there's this, like, young, tall, thin vampire girl holding a little raptor on a leash, you know, and the raptor's got its little frilled collar. And, you know, Vivian comes and basically gives her influence to the raptor, and it kind of just turns around, looks at the girl, and bites her in half.
yeah, no, it's great. And then after Vivian's pretty much decided that she's had enough, and after the feeling of the Montresor, she's kind of starting to think about what she needs to fight Nicol Bolas, because that fight is inevitable. She must defeat Nicol Bolas for Skala, of course.
Right.
And she remembers of something she heard about the dragons of Shiv.
Right.
And
Nicol Bolas is not the only dragon.
And
there are many,
like,
dragons out there.
I could get a dragon. I mean, I got the Montresor. Why can't I get a dragon?
Right. Dinosaur with wings. Why not?
So at this point, she walks away from Ixalan, and we don't know where. But it just goes to show that this is recent.
Right. Well, at the end of the story, it says Vivian spared Ixalan one final look before she flashed into the next plane and felt the hard, hot air of Shiv her skin. So she's on Dominaria in Shiv.
Just to think, if she's on Dominaria, could she have been there during the battle?
Oh, man. Who knows? I mean, this is very intriguing. I hope that she runs into more main characters and we get to hear a little bit more about her.
I have a feeling we are going to see her red-green in the second set of Ravnica next year.
Oh, in Ravnica?
Calling it. Oh, going to see her on Ravnica.
Look at you. Okay, so wait. This calls into question. We now have two green planeswalkers with Nyssa Vivian.
Nyssa has left the Gatewatch.
But where's Big Daddy Garrick?
Whoa, Garrick's black green right now, man. He's off doing his own thing. He's got the Hedron of Nyxilis in him, and there's so many questions.
Yes. Absolutely. And I love after having seen some of these spoilers for this new Ravnica set that
Wait, whoa. Are you thinking about Assassin's Trophy?
No. Well, I'm thinking of the fact that it's Golgari, we have a Vraska, and we're gonna get back into the story where we left off when Vraska left Ixalan to go back to Ravnica without the memories of her and Jace's interaction. It's gonna get real, and for God's sakes, I hope they do the story justice, because this Vivian story was definitely a breath of fresh air after that
Corset,
you know, M19 story. Yeah. So good on you, Wizards. You found a good one here. Let's keep it up. We love the story.
Whoa. And our listeners I gotta say, Corset was written right. It was just the fact that they decided to do it as two stories melded together. That was the problem.
Oh, man. Yeah,
that was really the problem. Yeah. I mean, if they had gone with one coherent story, like let's say, for instance, that in a fever dream, we see Yasova having this going on and she's in a fever dream for like a month straight. And we just go the entire story of Bolas and Ugin and seen from one of the other dragons, I think it would have been a better story.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So,
but the fact that they did it from Ugin and then from Bolas, it felt like they mashed three stories into one, and it was really hard to read.
Yeah. And then you'd mentioned earlier that we can expect to see new story starting sometime early in October.
Yeah, I think they're planning to start once we get out of, what do we got? We got Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica is at the end of October. We've got here at the end of this month, pre-release next weekend.
Next weekend.
I know.
I mean, we've got Worlds this weekend. Who knew? But we'll talk a little bit more about that in our next segment.
Oh,
but
no.
Ravnica is upon us.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking, 2-3 weeks, we're going to start getting new story. And, I mean, the return to Ravnica is always an intriguing idea, especially when we've seen so much great story there before. I mean, you got Agents of Artifice, the Purifying Fire. It's where Tezzeret lost to Jace. It's where Baltris tries to capture Chandra. It's where we find out that Argus Kos is investigating his own death as a ghost because of the Obsidat, and we find out that almost all the angels on Ravnica are actually clones of Razia. So there's some crazy story that happens on Ravnica, not to mention that Thousand-Year Storm.
Yep. So we look forward to a very riveting story taking us through Ravnica, but in the meantime, Greg, why don't we jump on over to As Foretold?
Oh, man. I like that segment. It's where we get to talk about new things.
Well, the best part is it's been so many weeks. We put so many lore counters on here that, you know, we can pretty much cast anything for free.
That's true. Know, that's pretty
on everyone's
true.
Turn. Where do you want to start with this?
Man, we didn't talk about Commander and the fact that we got so many great things out of this most recent Commander set. I mean, I'm a Natu with the potential being played in Legacy. What? Three drops? Planeswalkers? Legacy? That's not something you usually get in the same sentence.
Right.
Then you've got Guild of Ravnica. We've had a number of announcements. Magic Knight. We've got the Guild Master, the Guild Kits coming out late next month. I'm really excited for those.
And don't worry about any crazy buy a box promo fiasco this time.
Oh my god, 16-16.
A big dumb green worm. Wait, does it have Convoke?
It does have Convoke.
Oh no. Oh, great. No. Nope, it's done. This is a $70 card. It's going to go in mono green stompy. And you know how Thud is there, right?
Oh, yeah.
That one red card to sacrifice something and deal damage, whatever. It's over. It's over. It's over. Four of any deck, Legacy playable, Vintage playable.
Yes, yes, no. Totally.
A lot of people seem to think that this buy a box promo is going to be a little more tame than Nexus of Fate. Dude, we were out for all that. We didn't even get a chance to dive into Nexus of Fate. But anyway, that's probably a good thing. You probably all heard enough about that.
Yeah. There was a lot.
So, but then, one story that this is actually, what is it? Friday, September 21st?
It is the 21st. And I mean, this came out, what, 2 days ago, right? This is M&M, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, my God.
He released a new album, too.
Yeah, he did. Sure. I jumped onto Twitter, as I do every once a month, this morning.
But how do you not go on every day?
I saw a post from Jerry Thompson. Now, I do frequently listen to the Game podcast.
Okay.
It is very awesome. Love it. I respect the guy a lot, you know, both as a Magic player and as a community member. He's got a lot of good stuff to say. Now, this is very I kind of have to stop saying interesting.
Polarizing.
This is very, So, in protest of the current state of professional Magic, Jerry Thompson is opting to not participate in the World Championships this weekend. He is doing this because of many reasons. The first of this, he has an article that he wrote on Reddit.
Maybe we should put that link in the show notes, and we could summarize what we see here. Because I think what I was reading over there is he's really upset at Wizards of the Coast. And the real bulk of this is they continue to make Pro Tours and World Championships harder and harder to get in. I mean, they make the numbers so high to get into that. Why not just expand it? Why not? If you really want to have World Championships, you need to have, with the amount of people that play Magic now, you need to have a national that leads to the Worlds. You need to have this cut so you don't have only 24 people in the World Championship. Maybe we top it up to, 96 players? If they were to do, like, the top 100 players in the world, we're talking about a game that has millions of players in it. There is no reason to only allow the top 24 people to compete in Worlds. Okay?
Right.
Sure. You're going to make us a 3D event over three different things, and it's cool, but you don't get to see your personal pro locally. I mean, how many pros do you see on that list? Do you interact with on a basis often?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was even thinking about this a while ago, like even just the platinum pros. Yeah. It's like you can't name them. You know, I mean, I watch sports, I watch football. I can name a bunch of players on the Raiders team. But that's just because, you know, I can see them on TV, on ESPN, on the actual shows, and they go in depth talking about each individual player. We get, you know, kind of backstory. We get
could you imagine
history,
as you will. There's about what, a few commanders. There's a few modern. There's a few standard. Like talking podcasts that most people listen to. And I really think that they need to be reaching out to their pros, their local pros, and saying, hey, would you be interested in coming to talk with us? Would you be okay if I can get an hour of your time and pick your brain and then post it online?
And that goes back to another comment that I made a while ago, which is if there is to be any change with the structure of how they, you know, prize out or support the pro player scene, it's going to be community driven,
yeah.
You know, and that we're not going to go into the whole Hall of Fame topic.
I think the big issue right now, though, is that Wizards is focusing on their top end now that they're owned by Hasbro and less about community creation. And a lot of that really stems. A big part of that is your local game store. Have you been to your local game store in the last month?
In the last month, actually, I have once. But
did
it was
you get a chance
see...
to talk to the person behind the counter?
Yes, I did.
So you know that Wizards stopped direct selling.
Well, we saw this also with the release of the Mythic set from, it's not Masterpiece.
The Masterpiece,
but you know what
it's
about?
Called Masterpiece set, yeah.
Oh, Masterpiece, there
yeah,
you
yeah.
go.
The,
but,
yeah, the 8-pack, but they're discontinuing all direct sales to stores. And what this really tells me is that they want to work with distributors more than their stores. They don't
sure.
want to have to deal with the problems at the store level. And in
right.
some instance, I understand that, but it also makes it so that the smaller stores that don't have $10,000 or $20,000 of sitting stock won't survive.
Right.
I mean.
Right. Well, just to circle back here, there in Jerry's article, he gives five specific anecdotes, examples of, you know, where the state of professional Magic is. And, you know, let's all remember that the dream of, you know, people coming into Magic who want to get competitive, they want to get onto this pro scene.
They want
and
to
it's
be
a lot
seen
of
at the
work.
Pro Tour and Worlds. They want to yeah, travel the world playing Magic.
Exactly. It's a lot of work, takes a lot of money. And just here's five quick things that he had issue with. And again, you can read the article for more detail, but the first thing he brings up is the fact that leading up to Worlds, they had big communication issues in regards to accommodations
and plus ones
involved. So people were definitely upset at the fact that they thought that people would be able to come with them, you know, like their plus one or significant other or whomever, and then that plans changed. And they changed on a moment's notice, just days before the actual event. I mean, flights and stuff have to be booked, you know, way in advance.
You got
to
plan this out at least 3 months in advance.
Right. Okay. So they had poor communication.
To physically do it, like with your money and your room, if you were to plan this out, we'll say 2 weeks. Let's say 2 weeks ago, you decided you wanted to go to see the World Championship. It would cost you close to $2,000.
Right. So it's just a lot of confusion, a lot of inconvenience, like to the nth degree. And then second, just in terms of formats for these high-level tournaments, you know, pros are trying to prepare, you know, months in advance, maybe even years in advance, just throughout their practice and their methods. And the fact that sometimes they don't know the format for these high-level tournaments is a little discouraging. You know, I mean, moving into Worlds here, they're going back to Dominaria Draft. I mean, that's not even the current set. And we've got Guilds of Ravnica coming up here. And, you know, Wizards should want to promote their new product. So
So this is something that I thought was really funny. Coming into my game store today, having Worlds on the TV screen, I'm like, wait, they drafted Dominaria? I mean, why would you draft Dominaria when you literally just had Guilds come out? You could have had, like, pro players should have access to cards early. I see no reason why they couldn't have gotten access to these cards and drafted them through something like Arena, Modo, or something that Wizards could have done for these people. And it should be Guilds. I mean, if they did Guilds right now at the World Championship, I don't even see how many people are watching right now, but we'll just say a couple thousand people that are watching currently.
Not about 9,000.
9,000 would be really interested in buying guilds more. But instead, that's we're not seeing that.
Yep. And the last, I mean, there's more, but the last point of contention I wanted to bring up here was the fact that the Silver Showcase, we never were able to actually circle back on the repercussions and aftermath of all that. Might I point out that, remember when we were talking about it and we said, hey, wouldn't it be funny if there was no power opened and they got a Scheherazade? And look what happened. Who can predict the future? But right here at the Wind Condition Podcast, the whole thing was an absolute joke. I mean, you want to get on a live stream trying to promote Magic. It's got new sets. It's got Arena. It's got all these avenues that are interesting for this day and age and new people playing Magic. Instead, they want to go up there and like play nostalgic, you can never get these cards really dumbed down in terms of mechanics, and everything.
Breathe.
I'm sorry.
I know.
I was so heated when I heard about it, and now I'm even more mad that we were right when we predicted all this stuff.
Well, but I know. I agree.
Anyway.
And now,
that's just
talking about this, we've got the arena wipe and the open beta starting on, what, Sunday, the 24th, right? No, it's Monday.
Okay. Oh, yeah. If it's the 24th, that would be Monday, I believe. Yeah,
and you heard about that, right?
No, I did not.
So anybody that was a part of the closed beta, their account is going to be wiped. Anything that they purchase monetarily will be refunded back to them in stones. And they will reopen the open beta on Monday. So what that really means is that starting Monday, anybody can play MTG Arena. Now, if you're one of the few people that did have a beta code, you're going to get three Planeswalkers when the open beta starts.
Right.
So that means you're going to have access to more stuff. The only thing that I really hope for out of this is that they've got it where it's going to be best of three for the standard gameplay because I'm tired of red deck wins.
Yeah, well, first tournament around in each set, it usually seems a safe bet, and people are all about, you know, maximizing their value and winning, so red seems the best
possible. What happened on Arena is that everybody was red deck wins because it was easy enough to get your hands on, and it was one game win. So one game is the match. So when you're playing a red deck and there's no sideboard, how do you not win?
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, anyhow, that's really cool. I'm really excited for that.
Yeah. So anyway, to coming back to this article and this protest, you know, he's received a lot of support from people via replies and retweets and stuff like that. I think that it is a good starting gesture to kind of get people talking about it. But like you were saying earlier, Greg, the change in the structure for how the Pro Tour happens has to be okayed by Big Daddy Hasbro.
Yeah.
And I unfortunately do not see there being a call to action,
you know,
from Wizards until they are instructed to do so. And there's really going to be no reason for them to change anything until they see a decrease in profits. And let's not kid each other. They're not going to stop buying Magic cards.
No.
People are not going to say, I'm not going to buy this new set because, you know why? It's a great game. It's fun. People want to play. And Hasbro makes money off of big box stores.
That's exactly what we're talking about. I've watched a lot of Rudy on Alpha Investments. I don't know if you've looked at this.
I've seen him before, but not recently.
So because of the fact that Ixalan and Core 19 did really poorly, like Amonkhet too, in small mom-and-pop stores, it did badly. So many of those distributors made a secondary sale to big box stores like Target and what was Toys R Us and other storefronts. So what Rudy did is he made a deal with this investment company and bought it all. I mean, he spent something like $800,000 and just bought it all. I mean, he has a monopoly on what's left out there. And
interesting.
By doing this, it allows him to control the stock. Now, this is not illegal. Being the fact it is not publicly traded, this is not considered stock manipulation. This is not considered a monopoly because stores still have it. But he can control the outflow of these products. So he essentially is going to be able to price them out.
That's the free market economy with this, with magic, because I don't know if you remember when, do you remember Martin Shkreli?
Oh yeah.
The guy who,
but he tried to do it only on the top end and
on reserveless cards. No, I know. But what I'm saying, and this whole buyout with reserveless cards recently, when the last like 2 or 3 years, we've seen these prices just absolutely skyrocket. People look to magic in the immediate as a good investment. Now, that's not to say that it'll hold long term, and we've started to see some of these prices plateau, but honestly, that is just a way that the economics of the game of Magic works. It's, you know, unfortunate for some, very fortunate for a few, and it's just kind of the way it is.
Yeah.
So,
well, it'll be interesting to see what 2019 brings for us monetarily as a game. People are still going to make this. People are still going to play it. And we already know that proxies and fakes, although good, can still be told differently. So it's, we don't have to worry about fakes anymore. I don't think their printing press are good enough, blah, 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 this and that. And then when it boils down to the fact that we've got sets like Guilds of Ravnica coming out, which has a $35 rare.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be good.
It's a rare. Yeah.
It's looking good right now. Playability of Magic is high. And we're still expanding. And people are talking doom and gloom about the Masterpiece set because, it's not going to do well. They're never going to do this again. I'm like, yeah, I guarantee you they're going to sell it in the first 30 seconds. A lot of people are saying, no, it's going to hang around. I'm like, no. 500,000 or 50,000 sets, half hour at best. If you're lucky, more than a minute.
Yeah.
And people are going to think that it's a failed option, but in all honesty, we don't like it. We think it's a bad idea to allow Wizards and Hasbro to direct sell to the customer, but at $250, your general player isn't interested in that. They just aren't.
No.
But it's going to sell. And most of the people buying are the ones that can sit on an investment. I mean, if you could sit on Gaia's Cradle for another 10 years, do you think it would go up?
10 years? Oh, absolutely.
How much do you think it would increase?
Do you
think it
would
be $1,000 in 10 years?
It really depends on the popularity of the Legacy format. I mean, if nothing changes, then, I mean, you see Vintage cards are still holding value, and nobody plays Vintage except for small pockets within the United States. I'm talking about sanctioned Vintage events.
Whoa, what about international play? Let's talk about Nationals in Japan.
Well, and that's why I would say Gaia's Cradle in 10 years.
I mean, there are places and areas that are starting a resurgence of old Magic because it's a slow moving format, and one or two events a year is exactly what they want.
Right. And Gaia's Cradle is kind of special because it definitely has high potential in Commander EDH as well.
Yes.
So anybody who wants to play a green deck with creatures wants a Gaia's Cradle in their EDH deck. So that demand I see now is much higher than the demand for it in Legacy or Vintage or something
Like
that.
Well, Legacy, if you want to play Legacy Elf Ball, you need 4 Cradles.
Sure.
So,
but if you want to play Commander with a green deck and you want to be very competitive, then you would need a Gaia's Cradle.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say that everybody playing Commander needs to be competitive, but, you know.
EDH picking up more and more. Anyhow, we really digress into something else here.
Yeah.
And it just boils down to the fact that Gary Thompson, I applaud the man because it's great that he's doing it. He needs to take it the next step. He needs to go to Hasbro. He needs to get the rest of the pros on board with him talking, because all these pros are sitting with TCG Player, Haruya, Channel Fireball, Star City Games, Cascade Games. There's a long list of sponsorships there. And I think that those sponsorships want to invest in their business, and the fact that they're going to be able to buy from distributors makes it hard when they can't buy direct.
Well, but here's the problem. Here's kind of the catch-22 with that is the sponsors are game stores, right?
Correct.
And Wizards and Hasbro aren't going to be doing the direct selling to them, right?
No more.
So the people sponsoring these pros might have their backs, but ultimately that's not going to affect the ultimate payout and prize structure and tournament structure and communication.
Well, the other and all part that stuff is the like I got a question here, and this goes out to people on the internet. Channel Fireball, do they still get to buy direct? How about Star City Games? Are they still buying direct or Cascade Games? Now, these are the three big companies here in America that are right now running our tournament scene. There's no other players in this field doing this. Now, if they can't buy direct from Wizards and they have to buy through distributors that can throttle them, that seems wrong. So I can only imagine that at this point they're still getting direct sales. Now, the fact that one company can and another company can't, now that brings up another problem with this whole system. So
sure.
It'd be interesting to find out if at this time, are those companies still able to buy direct? If they are, how is that fair to the mom and pops? How is that not market manipulation? I just hope it doesn't get to the point where the judges and the lawyers and the big number crunchers in our community take a look at this and start questioning it. I mean,
sure. And ultimately, where it's like, where does Wizards want you to play Magic? Do they want you to play at your kitchen table, or do they want you to play at local game stores?
Yeah.
They honestly, I don't know if they really care. As long as you're buying the Magic cards. You know, well, maybe Wizards does care, but Hasbro sure as heck doesn't. No. You don't see, you know, Mattel touting, you know, Barbie buy and play stores. They just want to sell them off the shelves, make their money, let them play with them at home.
Yeah.
You know, who could care about a professional Barbie scene? But, well, heck, you know, they're making tons of money.
Yeah, but then their costs on that is a lot lower than when it comes to Magic.
Sure. Especially when they're moving into a digital media. Anyway, let's move on here. We've kind of gotten off on a huge, huge tangent. But I thought that article was very interesting. Definitely check it out. I will try my best to put a link in the show notes. Let's take a walk, Greg.
Uh-oh.
Down to the Brewmaster's Lair.
Am I going
to
talk now?
I'm going to talk now.
So since we last met you guys, we had a Commander set release. We've had a lot of things released. And I think I alluded to the fact I've made one of the new Commanders. And the one I love token decks. Token decks are my favorite way to play. And we got a new token deck, and that is Bruticlad Telcor Engineer. If you don't know what this little guy does, he's a 4 generic blue-red legendary artifact creature Mir. And he says, creature tokens you control have haste. And at beginning of combat, each turn put out a 2/1 blue artifact creature Mir token. And then turn all tokens you control into a token of your choice. And he's a 4/4. So let's say, for instance, you use Saheeli's Artistry to copy out a...
A Noxious Gear Hulk.
Yeah, Noxious Gear Hulk twice over. So you get two Noxious Gear Hulks, and then you got like three other tokens. You can change them all to Noxious Gear Hulks. And then you get, what, 7 Noxious Gear Hulks to swing in with. Now, some of the other fun ones with this are cards like Helm of the Host. Helm of the Host on Bruticlad allows you to make non-legendary token copies of Bruticlad.
But I mean that'll just create you more Mir, right?
No.
Like all their abilities.
No. So I go, I this is really fun. So let's say this is turn 3 or 4. You have a Bruticlad out with a Helm of the Host. You got a couple token creatures or artifacts out on the board. So Helm the host transforms, makes a Bruticlad token. Bruticlad token's trigger goes off. You get a 2-1 mirror. And then you choose a token you control. You can choose that new non-legendary Bruticlad and turn all of your tokens into a Bruticlad token. Next turn, or if you take an extra combat phase, you get to create all those mirror and turn them all into Bruticlads.
Oh my
so it goes
gosh.
From 10 to 20, 20 to 40, 40 to 80. And then
wow.
it gets real crazy.
Wow.
But
that sounds...
there's some really cute cards you get to play with in this, like Rapacious One.
Ooh, I like that card. I missed that.
I mean,
Rise of Eldrazi.
Would you like to be able to swing in with a 5-4 trample? Oh, we'll make it 4 5-4 tramples that give you a 0-1 Eldrazi spawn for dealing combat damage. And then on your next turn...
those spawns are
5-4 Rapacious Ones.
Tokens.
Exactly. things like Brass's Bounty are bonkers in this deck.
Yep.
Anytime you can copy spells to copy tokens. Like this deck focuses a lot on instants and sorceries, because when you get to cast something like Cackling Counterpart on a Rapacious One or Dosin of Perfection, I'm playing with that card because
I
do a Dosin of Perfection, then I make all my tokens a Dosin of Perfection, and I go and cast a Rite of Revocation on Dosin of Perfection. Not only do I get a 1-1 wizard for each Dosin of Perfection, I get to get it 5 more. And then I get to flip my original one, and all the tokens now are 3-1s, and it just goes bonkers.
I'll have to play a game with you and be playing green so that you can copy my second harvest.
Oh, gosh. I'm running Wild Ricochet in this deck. I'm running spell
nice.
Copies because of things just like that.
Yeah.
So one of the fun things I did starting out was I did Saheeli's Artistry on, I don't remember, it was some creature, and Hedron Archive.
Okay.
And then I turned all of my tokens into Hedron Archive. Oh, I had 15 Hedron Archives. I could tap for 30 colorless mana off of my tokens.
That seems pretty good.
So what ended up happening is I ate 5 of them and turned it into 10 cards in my hand.
Oh, that sounds like a very, very, very fun
deck. The deck has a lot of versatility and playability. It's a lot of fun, and it allows you to make use of some really old cards like Zektar Shrine Expedition and just so
7-1s.
Many cool stuff.
Heck yeah. Now, did you run the new Saheeli in this deck?
I am running the new Saheeli in this deck.
How has that been?
Because she's actually pretty strong, giving you the extra servos, making some of your spells cheaper. Like, if you drop her early enough and you get enough lands or whatever, you can use her to make a copy of everything or make your Rite of Revocation cost like 3 kicked. Could you play? Like, it feels bustedly good.
Yeah.
I'm also using cards like Soul Foundry. I'm using cards like, I blanked on it, Mimic Vat. Mimic Vat's really cute because I get to put a token of
yes.
your creature out until end of turn, and then I clone it out. And it's like, oh, well, the token doesn't have the exile at the end of step. I get to keep all those copies of that creature that I have on Mimic Vat.
There you go.
Same thing's true with so many other cards.
I've got to think maybe it's a little overkill, but are you running Clone Legion?
I am. You know why, right? I mean, let's think of it this way. You've got out this really good... maybe you have a Liege out, right?
Okay.
And I've got like 10 tokens. I'll Clone Legion your field. I'll get that Liege. Now I've got 20 tokens. I'll turn them all into the Liege.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. They all get +18/+18 or +20/+20. Yeah, sure. I'll just swing in with them. You lose, right?
God, I miss playing Commander. Oh, I gotta play sometimes.
It's
soon.
A lot of fun. If you haven't,
yeah.
Bruticlad allows you to play some really fun, ridiculous magic. Personally, I like the Spells Matters deck more than the Artifacts Matters deck.
Mm-hmm.
Some people play it differently. I just put a Mechanized Production in there.
Oh, no. Nice.
Because It's stupid. It's so good. Especially, like, let's say I put it on a soul ring, even. And then mm-hmm. I get a token, and I turn all my tokens into soul rings. You're like, you get a turn to deal with this, or I win the game.
Yep.
So good. Yep. So good.
That sounds sounds like so much fun. All right. Well, there you go. You've got Greg giving you Brutaclad in all of its blue and red glory.
It is so much fun.
Yeah. So, man, okay. Well, it has been nice to get together and finally piece together another episode for you here.
Hopefully we have one for you before Christmas hits, right?
Yeah, we're on the quarterly schedule for podcast production. I don't know if you ever listen to the show Money Draft, but I do. It's another one of Jason Ault's podcasts. Yeah. But yeah, they release episodes every like 4 months.
Oh, wow.
And it's fine. Still good. Also, before we really get out of here, I wanted to ask you, do you listen to any much other podcasts? Magic podcast.
You know, game. Life's kept me busy. I don't mm-hmm. listen. I don't have a drive to work anymore. I drive 15 yeah. minutes to work. I don't have the time to listen right now, and I can't listen at work. So I don't
yeah.
have the time right now in my life to be able to listen. If I had mm-hmm. a bigger or longer ride, I might try to, but right now I just can't. I wish I did.
Yeah.
It'd be nice.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've had I've been training somebody, so I haven't been able to kind of fly solo like I'm used to. So yeah, I've went from basically binging every Magic podcast that I could get my hands on to really having to select, you know, down to a few that I really enjoy. Mm-hmm. And I've found that me personally, I'm not that, you know, spiky or competitive of a standard constructed player, or Legacy or Modern, whatever. But I do like listening to podcasts that. You know, they have good sort of banter back and forth, good personalities. And I it's sad to say, but two of my favorite podcasts have actually stopped. One only temporarily, but I used to listen to Card Hoarder podcast mm-hmm. quite religiously. I thought their lineup was quite funny. I loved their After Dark segment that they would do at the end of the show. Also, Stacking 60s, Riley Knight's podcast with his two co-hosts where they talked about Brawl. That's kind of on hiatus because Brawl has kind of been on a permanent hiatus since it started. I love Brawl, and I hate going on and seeing people talk about, oh, well, Brawl's not going to go anywhere. It's not that good.
It's interesting.
It's super fun.
It's fun, but...
And they called out our podcast, too. That was awesome. Awesome. I'm like, oh my God, Riley and I just said the Wind Condition podcast is good. I can die happy now. No.
Hopefully
but,
not.
But no, that one's good. I do really like First Strike, which is a podcast put on by KYT. I don't know what his Mm-mm. official name is, but his guests, Andy, Derek, and he's got a couple pro players that come on with him too. That show is really, really good. Very, very competitive. Got a lot of good news and debate on there, and they also are very competitive with their deck building and strategies. We mentioned the Game podcast earlier. That one's really good, but there's lots of really good podcasts out there, and, you know, it's been tough going months without putting one out, but, God, I realized how much I missed it after getting back here and doing this. So, any other closing thoughts, Greg, you might have before we get out of here?
Go play Magic.
Go play Magic. Yep, indeed. All right, well, let's also remind everybody that this show is still sponsored by Flipside Gaming. So head over to flipsidegaming.com where any product you order over $10, use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps. Save yourself 10% off your purchase. And we will do a future show giveaway coming up here sometime soon.
Yeah.
We'll figure that out coming up here shortly. So, Greg, where can our fine folk listening to this podcast find you?
You can still find me on Twitter at NoobSlasher2003. I just updated it, and now it says Greg, the co-host of the Wind Condition podcast now.
Oh, very nice. Being all official now.
I know,
so,
right?
He's still slashing noobs, though. Don't worry. He'll still slash them noobs. I am still at MTG_Sean. The show is at the Wind Condition. And check us out on Instagram. Check out our YouTube page. We still have some, you know, Twitch videos stored up there. But you can email us at thewindconditionpodcast@gmail.com. We love hearing from you guys. Sorry it's been so long, but we're really going to try to be better about getting out here to you. So, all that being said, Greg, thanks again.
Oh, yeah, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
And we will talk to you soon.
Oh no, he's wiping his eyes. His hands are covered in peanut butter and jelly. Oh no. Hey, buddy, stop.